Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, a weekly podcast talk show all about passion, flow, and creativity, where we talk to fellow creatives and learn how they take their dreams and turn them into their reality. So while the topic may change, the heart behind it remains the same. I'm your host, Aaron Holman, and my guest today is...
Darling Peter.
And Darling Peter, I'm happy you were able to join us today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, welcome to the podcast. This is a series all about passion, flow, and creativity. Things that I know you are overflowing with, Darling Peter. Just to get things started, Darling Peter is an event organizer, a DJ. I mean, there's so many hats that you've worn over the years. Just to start things off, please tell our listeners, what are your preferred pronouns? And then describe your own career in your words.
The right pronouns for me is he, him, his. And my career, yeah, I just do a lot of different things. And everything I do right now, I just, you know, I got into it. I was not like planning it or whatever. Things have just happened, you know. I grow up on a farm. I'm a farmer boy.
Where did you grow up? Where was that?
It was in the south of Holland. And my parents were quite Catholic, very strict Catholic, yes. And kind of old-fashioned and on a farm. I had one older brother and sister. And we always used to work on the farm, you know, milking cows, driving trucks. That was my life, kind of, till I was 19. Yeah. And then, thank God, things changed.
What happened?
I left the farm. I left. Yes. I said bye to the cows. And I went to the city. And then I was living in the north of Holland, in Groningen. And I started to go to study at the university in Breda. That's a city, and that's I studied media and entertainment management. And then I went to Amsterdam, and I started to work at Paradiso at the publicity department. Mm-hmm. And that was
How did that job come about? Paradiso.
It's so stupid because I was like, no, it is. Everything's kind of like, huh? So I want to do something with music management, you know, to manage artists, to find new talent and make them big stars. Something like that. That was like, okay, that's something I would like to do. And I was very gay, but I was a closeted gay. So I was not out, and I was a bit like scared to the world that they would not accept me because, that's not how I was raised. That it was, you know, on the farm, there are no many gay people.
No.
My parents didn't know any gay people. So for me, it was all kind of like, okay, I'm really the only gay in the village here. And so it was a whole journey to accept myself before other people could accept me and that I could be honest to other people. So when I was like study in Breda, I had a boyfriend in Amsterdam, and my family and friends were living in Groningen. So you have like three different cities, and I told my people from school in the weekend that I was at Groningen, at my family. And to my family, I told I stay in the south, you know, where I study. Yeah. But every weekend I was just in Amsterdam with my boyfriend. So it was just, my life was one big lie. And that's kind of exhausting, to be honest. So I did that for over a year. But how I get to Paradiso, I want to go to a concert of Beth Hart. Beth Hart, for the people who don't know her, she's kind of the Janis Joplin of these days. Her voice is so beautiful. It's so amazing. So look it up, Beth Hart, if you like kind of pop rock music. But it was sold out. And Paradiso is the most beautiful venue in whole Holland. It's an old church. All the big stars, they always, you know, want to perform over there. It's a really beautiful venue. So I never been there, but my boyfriend knew the head of department there because he was salsa aerobic teacher, and she was one of the students, you know. And he was like, I can ask you if she can arrange something for you. So I got two tickets. I went to pick up the tickets, and she was like, hey, you study something with media, right? Would you like to come and have a work placement?
Internship.
Thank you. Sometimes I'm struggling with English words, so I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it. The fact that I can't speak your language, it means I'm the one who needs to work harder. You know, like, you've got it.
You're helping me, so that's good. So, she was like, would you like to do an internship here? And I was like, not sure, because I want to do music management and not PR marketing. But then after 2 months, I still didn't have any internship. So I called her and I was like, can I still come over and do it? So I start to do my internship at Paradiso, at the PR marketing department. And that was a great place because Paradiso is very open-minded and very free and a little bit kind of flower power atmosphere is hanging there. So I really felt very welcome, and I could really, like, you know, I felt accepted over there. Then I wanted to do another internship, but then in London, didn't work out, blah, blah, blah. In the end, I didn't have a job anymore. I almost didn't have a house anymore. I could not go to London anymore. And then I was like, okay, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. So I told somebody who was doing club nights at Paradiso, like, hey, you should do like an open-minded club night at Sunday night. Because Sunday night, there's not much going on in Amsterdam. You know, the city is ready for it. So then she said, okay, then you're going to become a booker at Paradiso, and you're going to start your own club nights, and we're going to do it together. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. You know, I have nothing to do at the moment. So that's how I started to create events. But I had no fucking clue what I was doing, because I was not even, you know, celebrating my birthday. You know, I had no experience in put up a new club night or organizing events. I had no clue. So
what were the first steps like then? What was that first party that you were in charge of like?
My first party was a weekly Sunday night at a venue where fits in like 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. So sometimes my first club night, the name was Sonde, which means sin. Mm. So, like a church, the seven sins, you know. So I would play with the angel and the devil and all everything in between. And it was a very open-minded target group, you know, very LGBTQ, straight, you're welcome, but, you know, fit to the program. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. And sometimes there were like 800 to 1,000 people. And sometimes we had nights with like 100 people. But I was so naive and so blinded at that moment. I was just like, every week, it was such a fun night. And there were so many nice people. And it was such a nice vibe, you know. So, and people were like, you know, at security and bartenders were looking at me during the night like, what the fuck are you doing? They're like walking 50 people here, you know, it's a big venue, this is not working. And then I was like, oh, but those 50 people were so nice and they had such a good time, you know. It was cute but very naive, I think. So for years I organized for 2.5 years I did that night every Sunday night. And I was always, during the week, I was going out. When I moved to Amsterdam the first 5 years, I think I was going out 8 nights a week. It was, seriously, I was everywhere, every day. It was like I had a bed somewhere in a room, but I was almost not there. I was just always going out. And I think also that's very much the way how I created my network in nightlife.
That's a very big thing. Here in the town where I live, it's a very rural town, but I created a drag trivia night and show here in this town, and it became a weekly thing. But one of the biggest parts of getting people to work with you is you have to show up and you have to support other people.
Definitely.
Yeah. You have to be a part of the community to, I don't know, to make a big part in it.
Yeah, you cannot just, you know, stay home and say, hey, I'm organizing the events. Everybody should come now. But I never go somewhere else. You know, yes, you definitely have to support your DJ friends and your colleagues and your, you know, your local drag queens and your dancers, all of it. You know, if somebody starts a new event, then show up. And in Amsterdam, I don't know, you know, probably many other places, it will be the same. It's very much like somebody starts a new event and it's like, oh, let's see if it works out. We stay home, we wait till what other people will say about it. And then if it's positive, probably we will go the second or the third time. And
I'm like, prove it to people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm like, come on, show some support from the very first time. Let's go. Let's make something a success.
Mm-hmm. And so this work with Paradiso that you did, I believe you said for about two and a half years. What did that then lead into? What was the end of your time more like there?
Well, that night, the club night scene was not working out, you know?
Yeah.
You saw it coming. So that was not working out. So that's finished. And then I start new club nights. Club nights like called Paranoia, Too Many Dicks on the Dance Floor, all different gay, LGBTQ related parties. Everything I always did was very much mixed. It's not very much like only a gay man or you know, it's I love a good mix, but I want the LGBTQ community to decide what the vibe is. You know, they make the rules. If you like it, join. If you are not okay with anything, if you're, you know, any homophobe, racism, etc., leave and never come back.
Yes.
And so I did a lot of club nights, and then it was also like not going very well with economy. Mm. You know, there were prices. So I decided to start to DJ at my own events, like, you know, play the first one and a half hour because people will just walk in. So I thought, okay, I don't want to do that really alone because I think it's really boring and I had no idea how to DJ. So I asked friends of me, like, okay, let's do this together, you know, like a team. And you have like this series from the past, the A team, you know that? The four guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Et cetera, very macho, cool guys. And then, okay, the A team, let's make us the gay team. So we started, I think, with 7 people was the idea, but that was not working out. So the first time only we were with 3. And that was a lot of fun, but really fast. One guy was way too pretty. He was like the Beyonce of the group. So we throw him out. Yes.
Hilarious. Do.
So poor Michelle and Kelly stayed together.
Which one are you?
We just changed the whole time.
Yep, depends on the day.
No, but and we were really good friends, and his name is Tay. So from the gay team we changed to the G team, so people could, you know, give that G to whatever they want to call it, gangster or gaga or gay or whatever. So and we almost DJed together for 9 years, and it all started as a joke. But after a while, other people start to book us for parties and even start to pay us. And we were like, huh? You're paying us money to make a party? Well, that's interesting. So that's how And we started to learn how to DJ and to mix and to, you know, took it more serious, and which was really nice. Then my club nights, they changed the whole time, and we started to do our own weekly club night in Amsterdam at another venue, which was really nice, but things were so different then. Mm-hmm. It was really crisis. You have like one gay street here in Amsterdam. You have a few, but one is a little bit like the main street.
There always seems to be one major like gay street in every city, you know, where it's like, this is where the gays get to live.
Exactly. Yeah. And here it's called, well, pronounced the Reguliersdwarsstraat. And probably that sounds like because that's how we Dutch people sound if we talk Dutch. But that was like a ghost street. Everything was closed. So it was a really, really weird period. I think it was around 2011. Then I started a festival in 2012 together with a person that was working for another club. So we joined together and we started a festival called Milkshake Festival. And we,
I love the slogan for that. It's for boys who love girls, who love girls, who love boys, for all that love.
Yeah, and that's stolen from a song of Blur.
Yes!
Exactly. and that was a success from the very first beginning. It was sold out with like 12,000 people the first year in a park here in Amsterdam.
What was different about what you had been doing before and then stepping into a music festival for 12,000 people?
Yeah, it was quite a different thing, but it was also something that was really missing in the Netherlands and especially in Amsterdam, a really an LGBTQ plus oriented festival that was not existing yet. You know, you had those open-minded festivals, but this was quite different. So it was really something that was needed. And I always think when you start a new event, you really need the support of the community straight away from the very first second. And that was happening because we had a lot of support of many people who were joining us, and with everything, you know, when we announced it the first time, people really loved it and supported from the very first second. And I think that's always so important, especially when it's such a big event, you know. We were not aiming on like 200 people. No, we were talking about at least 10,000 people. And in the end, 12,000 people showed up the very first edition. So that was really special.
What did the Milkshake Festival look like? What was going on? Is it predominantly a music festival, arts combination?
It is. It's a music dance festival. It were like six different stages hosted by six different organizations who had a link with one of the both clubs, you know, who were already organizing events there during the years. And it was really from like 18 till 80 plus, you know, so that was also how we were working it, and very much colorful. We had we have a really famous photographer called Erwin Olaf, and he organized events in Paradiso. So at that moment I called him and I said, well, you are the first person who's on our mind to shoot the artwork. And he totally understood our concept from the very first second. And he was like, okay, I would love to shoot the artwork to make that, but I also would like to host a stage. And that was for us like a surprise and a gift at the same time, because, you know, it was like plus, 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 win, win, win. And he created a beautiful artwork. We never said in the beginning, this is like an LGBT festival, because I don't believe in that you have to say what something is, you know? Sometimes it's much stronger to show something, and if the right audience group and the right target group understand what you mean. So we had like two different artwork, two different posters. One poster was a white boy, a fit boy, in like a little slip with animal print. And he had like red lipstick, but you didn't see his eyes. So the poster was still his nose. And he had a naked body and then this animal print slip. And then the other poster was a beautiful black curvy girl. And, you know, it was like about body positivity and about that, you know, we'll come in all shapes, in all colors, in all genders, etc. And that was also in our first press release, something, it, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from, who you are, what the skin or the color of your skin is, what your religion is. It's about that you can express yourself and that you can be yourself and that you can love yourself, because, well, that is the most important thing, you know, to be yourself and to be happy with yourself and to accept yourself. And it's a wonderful thing if other people also accept you. But in first things first, that you accept yourself. That's so important.
So where does the name Milkshake come from? Why is it called the Milkshake Festival? I think I can get it, but I'm just curious.
We were going through a recipe book and just, you know, looking for words. And we went to many books, I guess. But then in the recipe book, we found the word milkshake. And it was like, hey, you know, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. There you go.
There it is.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
It's to the yard and it is in a park. So it all makes sense. It all came together. And a shake is something that blends, you know.
Yes,
everything comes together, and that's exactly what it should be.
That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and so it was a very success. I did it for 2 years, and then I quit. And it's still existing, and it's still a big success. And they do it like a weekender these days. And that was in the same year as I started that in 2012. I was asked to become the creative director of a club here in Amsterdam called Club Nyx. Mm-hmm. And Nyx is NYX, and it means the how do you say it? The Godin, the goddess of the night. That's what it means.
Perfect. Yes.
So, and Nyx was a very open-minded club. So I did there the first 3 years. I was creative director and PR manager. So I, you know, made all concepts for all the club nights on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I did all the PR marketing. In the beginning, even the artwork, it was the ugliest artwork in the world. Oh my God. There was not that much budget when we opened, you know, there was still this kind of crisis where, and things were always in the beginning, things are going wrong. It took much longer with, building everything and get everything right before we opened. So when we opened, it was more like, the planning was to give you this amount of money for the first year for PR marketing. Well, it's going to be almost nothing, you know? It was like, let's make it work. And I worked my ass off, but I had so many different functions for one person, you know? I was doing productions. I started with like, we opened in October 2012, and in January 2013, I started to book Rue Girls from RuPaul Drag Race.
The House of Nyx.
Yeah, the House of Nyx, exactly. Also, that was a concept where we always booked Rue Girls. And the very first one, and it was such a different time, because now they're like traveling all over the world with Work the World Tour and many other great concepts. But then, you know, you have one night and there are like 8 Rue Girls you can see on stage or something like that. Then it was so different. So the very first one I booked was Sharon Needles. Mm-hmm. And Sharon Needles was great to work with, but it was it's a character, you know.
Yeah, Sharon Needles is very kind. I've spent a good deal of time with them in over the years as well, and Sharon, yeah, is a complete bitch, but that is the character. They are actually a very kind person. Yeah. Every time that I've dealt with them.
Yeah, and for me that was the same experience. It was also for me the first time I started to watch RuPaul's Drag Race. So I started at season 4 and I loved it, of course, and I heard many stories about it, but I just never had the possibility to see it. So then I started to watch it. I booked Sharon Needles, and it was seriously one of my favorite nights ever, because for her it was and that was also nice, because I did a lot of things at the club, but one of the things that is so nice if you have to do many things yourself is that you're in control of many things. So, you know, I picked her up at the airport, we did a sound check together, I brought her to the hotel, you spend some time together, and it's, you take care of your artists and your guests. And that's really nice. So I had the feeling that you can, you know, they kind of trust you in a way if there's a nice connection. And Sharon felt very comfortable, and it was her very first gig overseas. So that was kind of special.
Whoa, that is special. Especially like you said, because nowadays it's so commonplace for, you know, specifically these Rue girls, but even just other drag queens, the opportunity to do this travel is just far more common. That's really incredible. You were able to provide Sharon that opportunity.
Yeah. And it was, and she was so thankful, and but she was also really emotional, because she did her first appearance. So I, and the Knicks, we just had this really small stage. It's like 1 by 2 meter or something like that. It's like, you know, you walk in with the artist by the sound check and you already start to apologize. It's amazing you're here, and I'm so sorry. There's like no space for you on the stage. And but she was totally okay with it. And but she came up, she was standing on stage, and it was seriously like there was a priest talking, you know. And yeah. It was like we were in church, and everybody was, can I get an amen? It was amen, amen, hallelujah. And it was so wonderful. And
I love gay church.
Oh, me too. It's my favorite church, honey.
Me too.
Definitely. And it was so beautiful. So when she did her first performance and she went back to the dressing room, she was in tears. Because she was so emotional, because it, she was like, how the hell do people know who I am? I'm at the other side of the world. How is that possible? It was really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, so I did many, many club nights at this club, Knicks.
And over the course of the time that you were there, this about 3 years or so, can you estimate how many... Can you estimate how many events that you were leading and creating?
Well, let's see. That's 3.
I know it's a hard one.
It must be something like 160, 170 nights, I guess.
Wow.
Not with everything. I was in full control, because after a while, you know, you have finally...
You have to trust some people, and you have to work with others.
And people can take control of other nights, you know. So after a while, the Thursday night, I left it and I was like, bye. So that's for other people, which was only amazing that I could do less. But yeah, for Friday and Saturday night, I did that for years. And but after 3 years, I was so, so tired that I was like, okay, I cannot come up with a new concept. Yeah, no, so I quit. And at that time, I started to work for Super Bowl. And Super Bowl is like the biggest drag battle in the Benelux.
How long has Super Bowl been around?
Since 2015, yes. 2015. So we just had our sixth edition, but it was Corona, as you know. So we did like an online edition because it was like cute and small, but at least we want to do something. But we had five editions. The first year, they asked me for organization, but I was like still at Nick's and so busy. So I said, I fully support it. And I will join to participate with a house. So we participated with the House of Knicks. And from the second edition of Super Bowl, I joined the organization. And that's with three friends of me, three amazing friends. And with the four of us, we have so much fun organizing this event. It's such a beautiful event. It's really like, you know, it are three rounds. You have like 10 different houses. And there are like also international houses, which is really nice. And we have three rounds. The first round is the lip sync. Second round is the dance battle. And the third round is the catwalk. The whole house is walking. We have judges. The audience all have one voting bill. And you just vote for your favorite house at the end of the evening. And then we have some, you know, you have Miss Super Bowl, you have Miss Fish, you have a new upcoming talent, you have...
Wow.
You know, and then we have the main title, of course, that people want, and that's the Super Bowl house of that year. And that's decided by the audience in the room. So that's very nice. And it really has grown so much in so many beautiful ways. And it's really, really a pleasure to make such a loving event. And I think we made it very credible also during the years and through the years. And it's because we love drag so much. I'm not a drag queen, but we love drag so much. And drag is, for a lot of people, it's just like, oh, there's a guy with a wig in a dress looking like a clown. No. That kind of drag you also have, thank God, because I love that kind of drag. But drag comes in so many ways. And it's are not only men who do drag these days, you know?
Agreed.
Exactly.
Agreed.
So I love it that you ask my pronouns when we start this conversation, because that's something we need to pay more attention to, because we're not only he or she anymore, you know? It's Wendy. So... It's very much what you say, respectful, right? To ask it. And I think in life, especially everything that's going on this year, Black Lives Matter, Corona, you know, you just go more back to yourself. It's one big mirror this year for many people, but a lot of people are not okay and not very comfortable with being confronted with themselves or with life or with questions. but in the end, I think if you go back to the basic, it's respect. How we should treat each other and have respect. And also for me personally, Black Lives Matter is the highlight of the year already, because it's insane that we don't have the equal rights, and that people are still, you know, that there's so much racism is going on. And even because it was Corona, I think it was a good thing. Yeah, let's make something positive about it. It was a good thing because people had time to talk with each other and to educate each other and to go outside to protest and for Black Lives Matter. So, yeah.
I agree. Corona, what I saw it do was it disrupted people's habits and like where they normally would be just keeping up, you know, fulfilling their duties, whatever they were, whatever their normal plans were. It broke up that normal thing, and it allowed people the opportunity to step back and evaluate for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, that things are not okay in terms of racial equality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it has been an interesting year, I must say. And we are, as all people, what we do, we just, you know, we just keep going on, and all these things we think we have to go to and to show up our face and whatever, you know, all these social things and the pressure or of work more, do more, be, you know, just going on. It's like a nonstop intercity train, you know, it just keeps going on. And I think it's very healthy, at least for me, to speak for myself, to breathe finally and to take rest and to listen to your body and to reflect on yourself, like, what the fuck did I do the last 10 years? And that's something I ask myself. And I think that's very interesting if you go into that.
It is. And it definitely is one of the ways to find, you have to find a silver lining in the craziness of everything going on.
Yeah.
Something I would love to touch on. I found out about, oh my gosh, it was something, honestly, it made me cry. You did a George Michael, you organized a George Michael tribute whenever he passed. Can you please just take us through that experience? What led you to doing it? How did it come to be? And then what was it like?
I must say that maybe that's my favorite event that I organized ever. Because...
That is high praise with this list of things that you've done. That is very high praise. I love it.
Well, but the thing is, it's, you know, working in nightlife, and if you work for, you know, people want to make money, and a lot of people are very commercial, or they like, okay, we need to make money, or they, you know, a lot of horrible people are also walking around in nightlife. And I
experience very selfish that. People.
Very selfish. There are a lot of egos. the thing with George Michael, I've always been a big, big, big fan of George Michael. I love his music. His voice is insane. His music is insane. His story is beautiful. And, you know, he's a gay man. His whole coming out story is already like, what the fuck, you know? It's we all know the story. But his music was so beautiful, and when he died, it was Christmas Day, and I was on my way to my parents. I was sitting in the train, and I was listening to his music, and I was like really sad about it, and I was like, I want to do something, and not just like, you know, sit at home and listen to his music and be like, oh, it's so beautiful. No, just really do a tribute. So at Paradiso, I was not working at that time anymore, but we are very, you know, where connections are really well, and I'm always welcome over there, so it's really nice. So I sent a mail to the director over there, and I was like, I would love to do a tribute for George Michael, but I want the venue for free. And the tickets for the audience are also going to be for free. And wow. I will arrange artists, etc., the whole thing. But everything has to be for free. It has to be just for respect and love as a tribute to George Michael. Paradiso was...
That's a tall order.
Yeah, but otherwise it's not okay.
Otherwise it's gross.
You know, exactly. It is really gross. So... my neighbors, they are a couple, and I organized a concert before with them during Pride. So I call them, and he is a Greek, the guy, and George Michael is Greek. So his love for George Michael was just as big as my love for George Michael. So, and he has his own orchestra. So he was like, I'm in this for 100%. So, and we worked together before, so we know each other. So we sit down. I think I sit at their kitchen table for 2 weeks, nonstop. We called artists, we make orders like, okay, can you sing this? Can you do a duet? Can you do that? I arranged everything with Paradiso. And then the ticket sale started. It was gone in 10 seconds. And then everybody start calling to parody. So, and people were mad and insane and like, and it's not true. There are no tickets and you just give away the tickets to whoever, or it's all fake. And people were just, you know, out of emotions, they were reacting. So it was like people were emotional and angry because, you know, there are so many people who love George Michael. So many people wanted to do, you know, have a last goodbye or come together. A lot of people really wanted to come together to celebrate the beautiful soul, George Michael. In the end, we did the night. We didn't have, like, we had one sound check, and it was also the only time artists and the band had time to do this together for the first time, to practice. Wow. But it was, and we just did it, it's still on YouTube, I think, the whole event. You can find it if you look for a George Michael tribute at Paradiso. And we just came in very early that morning, practiced all day sound checks, had some fast dinner. There were so many media that was interested to come over and to do something, etc. And it was a really beautiful event. But in the end, I hosted it the evening. The audience had a great time. The artist had a great time. Not every note was on key, but who cares? Yeah, no, and it's not shady, but there was no much time to practice, and it was also not about that, you know. It was really such a loving and beautiful night. I must say, most of the time when you organize an event and everybody's in it for free, you know, nobody is rich of it, of nobody, you know, then it's all about love and support. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, are most of the times the most beautiful events to organize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
If I think back about that day and night, it still makes me very happy.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that it's on YouTube. I had not been able to actually find it yet, but knowing that I can look it up just by, it's the George Michael tribute, and you said, what's the other word to attach to it? Paradiso?
So yeah.
Perfect. I can't wait. When I read about that, I was just like, this is such a unique thing, this event that you had organized. Yeah, I love the man. A brilliant voice, incredible, incredible. So, thank you for doing that. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but yeah, thanks for doing that for the community. So before we move into our final section of things, I have a couple more questions for you. Yeah. Darling Peter, what have you been up to lately? What are you currently doing? I know this past year saw you really step out on your own doing Darling Peter.
Yeah.
So yeah, talk about what you've been up to lately. I know pre-corona.
How this happens that I start to go solo. I had to DJ, was as we were a duo at as the G team, and we were booked for a cruise, a gay cruise. It was really nice. It was in the summer of 2018, I think in September, October. Amazing, like Icona Pop, Fenga Boys, Conchita Wurst, Loreen.
Oh my gosh, RuPaul, what a cruise.
RuPaul was DJing over there. No, yeah, it's all true.
He doesn't travel for anything.
I know. He was not in drag, but he came to play a DJ set. And we were like the main DJs every night at the main party. It was such an amazing, Open Sea Cruise was the name. Something horrible happened. We flew to Barcelona, and then at the terrace, the passport and the bag of my DJ friend Thijs was stolen. It was insane. He could not go on the cruise because you need a passport.
Gosh.
Crossing different countries, you know? So he had to go back to Amsterdam, and I went on my own on that cruise, and I had to DJ in the end 6 of the 7 nights on my own, and I'm not used to DJ on my own. And we already were a little bit discussing, like, he wants to do a little bit more disco music. I'm just very commercial. I just love pop music. I love house music. I love a lot of things, but I'm very commercial. And he was a little bit more like, I want to do my own thing. And I think that's also very healthy after almost 9 years. So I was on my own on that cruise, and I had such a good time, like, playing anything I want, just even more gay than I could imagine. And then there was this moment I will never forget. RuPaul was DJing. We were at Ibiza outside on that cruise with like 1,000 people in the sunshine. And I was like, okay, should I just, you know, I enjoy this. We should, you know, start a new chapter. I think I just start my solo career as a DJ. And then he played a song by Mariah Carey, one of my favorite songs. So it's Make It Happen. Almost never ever heard anybody play that song. So you have RuPaul, Mariah Carey, Make It Happen, Ibiza, a gay cruise. It's so gay. It was a moment. It was a moment. And then I decided I'm gonna start my solo DJ career, and let's call it Darling Peter.
Perfect.
Day it up. So that's how I started to start my DJ solo career. And that was from January 2019. So I did it for a year and it went really well. I just had amazing gigs and things were doing very well. I really, really enjoyed it. But then Corona came. And Corona is a bitch.
Oh my gosh. I know.
I know, it's in a way, you know, I feel, like I said, it's nice to reflect and it's nice to breathe and have a little rest. And I really enjoyed it. But that's, you know, I did it for half a year. I want to go back on track. I want to go back to business. I want to start I started a new club night called Sweetie Darling in January. It was a success for the first edition. It was sold out. It was really nice. And I was gonna do that 6 times a year every 2 months, and I was so excited about that. And then it just didn't happen, the second edition in March, because, you know, no events were allowed anymore. So I got sick in March, the 1st of March, 3 weeks. They didn't want to test me on Corona, but I'm pretty positive that it was Corona. I've been so sick that I took it really serious, and I also felt very much like, okay, this is gonna be serious, and this bitch is here to stay, you know. So I canceled whole 2020 already in my agenda and in my head, like, okay, just take this thing serious, because everything I do, DJing, organizing events, it's all bringing people together. You know, I also work as event manager for Pride Amsterdam. So that also brings a lot of people together. You know, we have the Kennel Parade here, and with main stage I organize at the Dam Square. And it's just, everything was canceled, or everything is still fucking canceled.
Yeah.
So annoying. But I took it very serious. I was like, okay, I was so sick. I don't want other people to be this sick. So I stayed the first 70 days inside. I didn't see anybody. I went to the supermarket 3 times. That's it. And but I really enjoyed the time with myself. So for me, it was also like a confirmation that I'm okay with myself. Because, you know, as a gay person, we all have these periods that you are looking for self-acceptance and self-love and to be okay with who you are, etc. And I'm 30 something at the moment, and I think it took me years to come to that point. And for me, it's really something that all comes together and feels really well to have this confirmation for myself that I feel like that I'm nice company for myself, and that I'm totally okay with myself. So that was something that really was a nice thing the last half year. And with work wise, there was just not much to do. I didn't feel I didn't feel the need to do like DJ live streams in my living room, etc. Because I made a lot of mixtapes and put them online. Because I thought it's nice, but it's boring if you have to watch an hour to watch me playing a DJ set, you know? So I was not feeling that, but like last Friday, we started with Drag Race Holland here in, yes, in the Netherlands, which is great and amazing that it's finally here. But all the 10 queens, I know, but also because of Corona, the producers of the show, they could not really organize an event that was Corona proof, etc. And all the 10 contestants, all the queens, I know already for years. With all of them, I'm working already for years, and some of them are really close friends of me. So I was like, come on, somebody has to throw them a premiere viewing party.
They deserve something. It's the first season.
And it's huge, you know? Yeah. Small country as us. It's the first season. It's gonna change their career because I think it's broadcasted via Rau Presents in 180 countries, I heard, which is insane. So it's such a big platform, and it's such a big next level to their career, you know? So I organized, I just put a WhatsApp group with all the 10 queens in it. And I was like, hey, I want to organize a viewing party for you guys. Are you all in? Well, are you going to come? We just do a viewing party. Everybody can bring 4 or 5 friends. We do a Q&A, and that's it. But something at least. So I organized that. It was also a beautiful, loving and supporting event because, again, everything was for free. The venue was for free. I did my work for free. I had friends who came to volunteer to make it all Corona-proof, and all the drag queens came for free, and it was such a beautiful event last Friday.
I saw photos from it, and I mean, oh my goodness, the looks were off the charts. Everyone looked incredible.
It's a great cast, and it's going to be really exciting. And it's just, you know, there was just one episode, so we still have 7 to go.
Like you said, you can watch that on the WOW Presents Plus app. I believe you can also catch it on Videoland in certain places as well. It's really, really incredible.
Did you watch the first episode?
Oh, I did. Yeah, of course I did.
Good. Do you have a favorite already?
I like Cedar Jean, but that's because I think he's hot.
Listen, I can fix you guys up.
Oh, that'd be great. My boyfriend and I would love to meet him. No, Cedar Jean stands out because of their humor as well. Yes. I really, really, really enjoy Chelsea Boy. And then Janae Jacquet. There's like a polish to her that I'm really attracted to. I love all types of drag. I love all types of queens. But what Janae does, I really respond really well to. It's like, everything's perfect.
Yes, it's a great queen. And it's funny because I know him already for like more than 10 years, and he started then. So you also see somebody really grow from the very first beginning till, you know, be a member of the first season of Drag Race Holland. So I'm very proud of all these girls. So I'm really happy for them.
Congratulations on getting to organize an event for that, for the premiere party. And thank you for doing it for the girls. They absolutely deserved that. Before we move into the last parts, do you have anything else that you would like to share just about yourself, about your life? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, that's a good question. I think we should just be a little bit more sweet to each other. I think that's it's just, you know, when I a few years ago when I was younger, I was always like, oh, all these cliches, fuck off with your cliches, you know, your bullshit. And everybody, I always had like the worst boyfriends, and they were just all like rats, and then I hated men. They should, you know, throw rocks at men.
You are so funny.
That's what I thought. But then after a while, it just says so much also about yourself, because you are the person who are let those people in your life. So I think we should just really, really, really be a little bit more nicer to each other, to listen to each other. And, you know, it's so important to be okay with who you are, Like if you look on my social media, I'm throwing only like glitters and the color pink and rainbows and stuff like that, because I just want to be an example for people that they can be okay with who they are. So I would love if there's a young farmer boy from 15 milking cows and driving a truck and being, you know, confused with who he is, that he could, you know, hear my story or see me and know that it can be totally fine, because it really doesn't matter who you are. It's so important that you accept yourself for who you are. So I think my message, if I can say something, you're not alone in this, and please be okay with who you are.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, we're going to move into a section that I like to call Passions Lately.
Oh.
This is very simple. Doesn't have to be complex, Peter. What are you passionate about lately? What's doing it for you?
Podcasting? Yes, podcasts. I'm like, okay, there's one thing since Corona. I never went to the gym or something like that because, you know, I'm always lazy, etc. But when I got sick in March and I got better from day one, we had like a Zoom group with a lot of people from the UK, Estland, Rotterdam, Amsterdam. Sometimes we were like with 5 people. Sometimes we were like with 20 people. I stayed in, but every day I had to do one thing. And that was like this workout via Zoom with this group every day at 1 p.m. And I found out that mentally it really helps you to exercise. And probably everybody knows already for years except me, but it really helped me through the last couple of months to feel so much better, to feel it really gives you so much positive energy. And even if you're a little bit negative, etc., normally I would be like, you know, eat ice cream on my couch and look something stupid and feel more stupid. And these days I just go to the gym and exercise for half an hour or an hour and really get rid of this energy and negative energy. So that's one thing that's a good tip to do for everybody. And during that workouts these days, I'm listening to podcasts, and I love podcasts so much. I didn't listen to them before. It's like 1 minute walking here from my house to the gym. So I go outside, and in that 1 minute, I just go to Spotify. I just type in somebody or something that I want to know. So like Billy Porter, or like this amazing actress, producer, Micaela Coel from I May Destroy You. If you didn't watch it, go watch it. It's insane. It's next level. So I'm just like Micaela Coel. And then there's like interview by a lecture here. And then just listen to it. And I love podcasts so much.
I do too. Obviously. Hence, I'm here creating one with you. No, I have found that instead of music, I do really, really enjoy taking in podcasts. Go ahead and do our listeners a favor. Can you let them know about your social media? Is there anything you want to shout out? Or how can people keep up with your work best, Peter?
Well, I'm on all the socials. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's at It's Darling Peter. And of course also SoundCloud. I have a lot of mixtapes. So my sound is very poppy, house, disco. I love vocals and I love positive, uplifting energy music. So that's perfect for workouts, for little house parties, for stuff like that. So go listen to my mixtapes and follow me on the socials.
Perfect. And then our final question for the podcast. What is the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy?
Ooh, that's a nice question. That make me, well, it's it's sunny right now in Amsterdam, and I am like, I love sunshine so much. And I'm not ready for the autumn and the winter, especially now with this corona stuff, you know, it's really like, oof, that's next level shit what's coming. So today I was biking through Amsterdam in the sunshine, and from tomorrow on it's gonna rain. So,
oh my Lord.
And the whole fucking week, as long as I could see the weathercast. So for me, that was my really happy moments today, that I was biking in the sun, in Amsterdam, and it's a beautiful city. I always love it here. So that was my happy moment.
Well, that is a perfect one, and thank you for sharing that with us. We're done now, but thank you so much for joining me on Eye to Eye today, sweet darling Peter. It has been a pleasure. Thank you, listeners, for being here with us. Now go outside. We'll be here and gayer when you get back. This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman, and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.